You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal.
CKUT is hiring a spoken word coordinator. Do you have a passion for storytelling and amplifying perspectives outside of the mainstream media landscape? Are you interested in working at a collectively run, independent community radio station? CKUT's Spoken Word Coordinator is a full-time position starting June 1st that is responsible for the coordination of all CKUT's spoken word programming and is part of CKUT's Collective Management Committee. The position is 35 hours a week, pays $18.36 an hour, and applications will be accepted until 9 a.m. on May 3rd, 2021. Please visit ckut.ca for more details. We're looking forward to hearing from you.
CKUT's 2021 virtual funding drive, Sowing the Seeds of Grassroots Change, came to a close on Sunday, March 28th, and we are overjoyed to let you all know that we've surpassed our initial goal of $25,000 and have raised a little over $30,000 to date. As always, we're accepting donations year-round. Thank you to our listeners for continuing to support grassroots community media. Your donations and support underline our mandate of people-powered radio. If you made a pledge but have not yet paid, please do so by May 1st to be eligible for our prize draw.
John Abbott on the air on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Hannah Johnston, and today I am joined by an experienced educator, an advocate for teachers and students alike, as well as a former school principal and student teacher supervisor. Currently, she has found her place within the Association of Administrators of English Schools of Quebec in her retirement. Please enjoy my interview with Mrs. Jan Langelier. What experiences do you have with remarkable teachers that have really left a lasting impression on you emotionally or professionally?
Well, I guess I would start with the fact that my dad was a teacher, and I always admired the work that he did. And I remember when I told him that I was going to go into teaching, he said to me, "Jan, I hope you're not doing this for the money or for the honor of it, because you'll get neither the recognition or the money." So I did it anyway many, many years ago. And over the years, I remember teachers that I had as of my own when I was young. Those that left impressions on me were the ones that cared deeply about us as students. Then as I went into teaching myself, and I had colleagues with me that I worked with, many of whom I admired, and that they were mentors for me going through my young teaching days. And then when I became a principal, I had the honor of having teachers that were working in the school where I was the principal, and I had the opportunity of working with them as a group and to see the incredible impact that each one of them had in different ways with their own students, and for me to be part of that journey. And then at the end of my career, after I retired and I was able to work with the McGill Education Department with student teachers, I was able to see the young, new teachers coming into the profession with the same kind of love for children and the love of teaching itself. And it gave me such pleasure to see that my profession that I love to this day, it was being continued on with very, very special young people who were willing to take on this very important job. And it's not just a job, it is a profession.
You're right, and I really agree with you. My mother is a teacher for grade 3 and 4 students, and I definitely would agree with you that it's not just a, you know, a 9 to 5. You definitely bring it home with you and you feel so much. The teachers can often be like a parent to the child, an example, really like an unwavering role model for these children. Did that responsibility ever become too great, or did you feel a sizable responsibility to sort of set this example all the time, even outside of the classroom?
Well, you know, for myself, I used to always tell my kids in my classes that I taught that we were a family. We were a family maybe for a year or two together, but we were a family, and that our experiences together in the classroom were bigger than just me being the teacher and them being the students, that we all had responsibilities to each other. And I think that over my career, that was the way that I handled some of the very difficult times, that sometimes a student coming to the classroom with baggage from their own homes and whatever, that are just incredibly difficult to handle, but they would come to school and they would find a safe place in my classroom. So yes, the responsibility of creating that safe place for students was always part of what I wanted for whatever class I taught over my many years of teaching. My daughters used to laugh and tell me that I wasn't allowed to bring any of those students home, because very often I would come home and I'd be talking about this one or that one and the issues they were living with, and oh my goodness, if only I could be, you know, they could come and live here with me for a little while. And my daughters used to say, Mom, you're not allowed to bring those kids home with you. So instead, I used to just keep them in my family at school. And over the years, I have come across kids after the fact, after I'd finished teaching them, they would meet me, in the shopping mall or out in public, and they would come. My kids called it the Madame Langelier experience, because they would come running, Madame Langelier, to see me and to talk to me. And very often I didn't even recognize them, because I taught them when they were in grade 1 or 2, and now they were adults. They remembered me, but I didn't necessarily remember them. But, you know, that was what I felt. I went into teaching for the love of teaching and the love of working with young people. And I've taught everything from kindergarten to grade 11 and university as well. So I've seen students in all different shapes and sizes, and all coming from all different backgrounds with all different issues that they brought with them. And I created a safe place for them is what I tried to do.
Yeah. And that's really amazing. I applaud you for that. And speaking of issues that are facing young adults and children outside of the classroom, I think a very pertinent topic, especially during more isolated forms of education, is that of mental health and how disorders such as depression and anxiety can directly impact students' schooling performance. So how would you say teachers and professors navigate expectations and goals along with accepting the limitations of certain mental illnesses?
Well, I think that particularly in the experience we're living right now, where more often we're finding that kids are not in school as much, they are being taught online, whether it's young kids or older kids, doesn't matter. The challenge for teachers today is to connect, is to make those connections that are very hard to make on Facebook and on Zoom. So those challenge, and I think that lack of human contact has made some of the mental issues more acute for some students, and for the teacher on the other end of the Zoom call, seeing a child that might be in some kind of difficulty and not being able to go over and put a hand on a shoulder or give them a hug or say to them, you know, get right down on, I used to spend more times on my hands and knees because I taught little kids, you know, so I could talk to them at their level, at their desk. If you're not able to do that on a Zoom call. So yeah, mental issues have become more exaggerated. It's one of the things that I think we're going to have to be very careful going forward, because technology will become more of a tool that will be used in it. And there's a lot of very positive things that can come out of the technology we have today. But we must never forget that human touch, that human connection that is not, it's not teaching math and it's not teaching science, but it's teaching a child. It's contacting a child. And if we are not careful, we will lose that. And I think it will make mental issues more acute going forward in the future.
You're definitely correct. I agree with you. And especially now, we can see that teachers are really struggling with this. And having been immersed yourself in the schools and now through the school board, what are some frustrations that teachers could be feeling and communicating, especially during this trying pandemic?
Well, I think that exactly what I've just talked about in reality is that feeling that they don't have the same ability to make a lasting relationship with their students because they're interrupted by things like face masks, things like distancing, things like you're not allowed to go close to your students in any way. For many teachers, that human connection is what they go into teaching for. And when it's taken away, it's very, very challenging. On the other hand, I must say that there are some advantages that have come out of this whole thing that show us, for example, students that live in far away places that are not, there are not enough of them, for example, to form a full class of a particular, highly specialized program like physics or chemistry or one of those. So if we're thinking, kids that live down in the Setzil area or down in the Gaspé, with the technology we have today, those kids can be part of a class and they don't have to be, not able to take these specialized subjects because they're not close enough to a school that can teach them. So there are some real good advantages to it. It's just a question of making sure we keep that balance. And for many teachers, especially elementary school teachers, that whole, home-like feeling that you have with your class, that family feeling that you have with your class, is been challenged by what we've been living in the last year. So I think for many teachers, that's what's causing their frustration. The frustration of not feeling like they're able to fully do what they would normally be doing in a normal school year, being taken away from them because of the situation, the health situation we face. So I think that's what's been causing many teachers to question whether or not this is really where they want to be right now. Many of my older colleagues who are looking at taking their retirement more quickly than they might have in the past because they just don't, this is not what teaching is for them anymore. So it's a very challenging time for everybody because we don't want to lose good people because of the fact that they're not able to give of themselves the way they're used to and the way they want to for their students.
Right, and I think that's really unfortunate and a really terrible circumstance to be in, especially there's so many gifted teachers and professors out there who are really trying their best. And I think it's interesting that you mentioned a balance. And to sort of going back to, from myself, a student perspective, my relationship with my education has changed from elementary school to high school to CJEP. However, the end goal remains the same, even during a pandemic, even, no matter the circumstances, which is really to achieve and to perform, which can be daunting and difficult to sustain. So what would you suggest to students on sustainability and how to coexist with the demands of performing and achieving?
I would say that all students should be encouraged to not be afraid to admit when they are struggling, to not be afraid to say to their teacher, I didn't understand that. I really didn't get it. Now, obviously, that's more of a problem or it's more of an issue once students get older and for all kinds of reasons, don't necessarily want to show that they didn't get the assignment or that they didn't understand what the teacher had said. But if students can be encouraged to not be afraid to admit when they have not understood something fully, even from the point of view of you know, they didn't quite want to do it anyway. Even if it's a mental state that they're in, they need to feel comfortable enough with their various teachers to be able to reach out to a teacher and say, I didn't get it, or I really was not feeling up to doing this assignment and I failed to do it. So not to be afraid to reach out. And I would say that particularly once you get into high school and Sejab, I guess even worse, I shouldn't say worse, but more complicated, is the fact that you have so many teachers. And to find a teacher, you can't always have that kind of relationship with all of your teachers. You can have them, even if you were able to get one or two of your teachers that you felt comfortable enough, you had enough of a connection that you could reach out and say, can you help me? That's what we need to encourage in our young people, is not to be afraid to make mistakes, to admit that they make mistakes, and to reach out for help. Well, that's what teachers are there for.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that's definitely something that has been challenging for me, especially when I'm really struggling. It's a very vulnerable position to be in, and sometimes it's really difficult to make that first step and to reach out for help. So that's really good advice. I really agree that would be very helpful. And so sort of switching gears onto the professional side and from a leadership perspective, having been a student teacher supervisor and a principal, it's always very interesting to me to find out how people in a leadership role have been able to balance being a coworker and as well as a superior. So how did you motivate and support those working with you and find that balance?
Kind of the way I did with my classroom. I basically would say to my staff of the school where I was a principal, and I would go say to them, we are a team here together. We are all in this together. We've got a whole variety of students that come from a particular background, that come from a particular area of the city, for example, and we are all in this together, and we're a family, and we're going to have our difficulties, and we're going to have our struggles, and we're going to have our arguments about things, and we're going to agree, and we're going to disagree, but we're all in this together. Now, on the other hand, in the role that I have to play in this family, I am an authority figure, and that I cannot get around, because there has to be some decision making taken, and as the principal of a school, that is one of my roles. But I never took decisions unilaterally, ever. I would always have a conversation with my family, with my teachers, and I think that that's the way that in many situations, whether it's as a school principal or whether it would be in leadership in any other industry for that matter, I think we're seeing a switch to a more collaborative approach to working together, that everybody has something to contribute, different things to contribute. In a school, the janitor contributes as much different things, but as much as the teachers. The daycare workers work just as hard with the same crazy kids as the teachers do. And if we're not all working sort of at least in some kind of common goal, with some common goals, then it doesn't work very well. So my role as the leader of a group like that would be to try and encourage that kind of collaboration. And sometimes it was hard to do because not everybody necessarily buys into that. That kind of approach. And so you've kind of, as a leader, you kind of have to go in with your philosophy, talk about it with the staff, and try and get some buy-in from the people that you're working with. I rarely had any difficulty with that. I used to find that people really like to be part of a team.
That's very true. And even I see it in my work life and in my school life. I think learning how to be a good leader is really an essential part of working well with others and coexisting, and that's some really good advice. Thank you very much. So it has been really a distinct pleasure to speak to Mrs. Jeanne Langelier, a former school principal, teacher, student teacher supervisor, and a current executive director of the Association of Administrators of English Schools of Quebec. I appreciate your time and valuable insight. So this has been John Abbott on the Air on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Hannah Johnston, and thank you for listening.
Hi, my name is Gabriel Simeon, reporting for John Abbott on the Air on CKUT 90.3 FM. And today, I'm going to tell you guys an interesting story. The story begins in high school. I can't really remember what grade I was in, but it was around grade 7 or 8. I had just finished my last class before lunch and I was starving. I was with one of my friends and we were on our way to the caf when all of a sudden the intercom came on with the sound of our principal saying, "This is a code red, this is not a drill." Okay, what's going on? I thought to myself. I looked around the caf and saw all the other kids running around and the caf lady telling us where to go. At this point, I was completely freaked out. There were so many questions running through my mind. Was there someone in the building? Do they have a weapon? Are my friends okay? Are they hurt? Once I snapped out of it, I rushed to the same spot as all the other kids and we hid in the food pantry in the back of the caf. We must have been at least 20 plus other students in there, all huddled up like sardines. My mind was still racing. I tend to overthink things in normal situations, so imagine me in an actual serious situation. I was in the food pantry with some other kids that I knew, and they seemed to be handling the situation completely different compared to me. They were on their phones playing games, talking about the class they just had, and when they should hang out this weekend. Since we were in the caf, the lunch ladies were all with us, and they kept on telling the other kids to be quiet since we were in such a serious situation. I remember one of the caf ladies saying, "If you guys don't stop talking, I'll tell the principal when this is over." This line stuck with me. When she said this, it gave me the impression that this whole situation was fake, since the caf lady seemed to be sure this whole mess was going to end soon. Once she said that, I immediately asked her, "Is this real?" To which she responded, "I don't know." "Look, caf lady, this is an intense moment right now. I can't have you being all mysterious. Just give me a straight answer, dammit." Is what I would have said if we weren't in the middle of hiding from what possibly could be a knife-wielding intruder. At this point, I don't know what to do. Is this real? Is it fake? Does this mean I'm going to miss my math test? All reasonable questions. After what felt like an eternity, the intercom came on and told us to keep quiet and stay hidden. "Gee, thanks for the information, Captain Obvious." About 20 minutes later, the intercom came on again with the principal saying the magic words to let us know we can safely come out. Once we all left the food pantry, I burst into tears of relief. I got to live another day. I started to look around the caf to see if I could spot any of my other friends to see if they were okay. Once I reunited with my friends, we got our lunch and talked about what happened. For some reason, a lot of the other students were acting as if this traumatizing situation didn't just happen and they were going on with their normal day. A couple days later, we found out the reason for the lockdown. Turns out, two people from the school got in a fight and one of them pulled out a white plastic knife and scratched the other person. Yeah, you heard me right. A white plastic knife. I thought my life was in danger, all because some student got attacked by one of, if not the most non-deadly weapon in the world. Now, I'm not saying my school handled the situation incorrectly, but I think it was blown out of proportion a bit too much. So much so, this whole event made it on the news. Thanks for listening. Once again, my name is Gabriel Simeon, reporting for John Abbott on the Air on CKUT 90.3 FM. Have a nice day.
What's up? My name is Mannequin Hotel. This is my new song called "Don't Ask Me." You can find it on SoundCloud or your favorite streaming platform. Enjoy.
No, you ain't gotta ask me for permission to get freaky, since you went. me for permission to get freaky. I need my girl to take initiative. Pull up on me no matter what time it is. I wanna hear you say what my name is. I know you like them strokes and them kisses. Most importantly, I'm trying to make you see that what I really need has been right next to me. And shawty, get down on your knees, screaming, baby, please. I know you wanna ride it. I give you the keys. Oh, I give you the keys. No, you ain't gotta ask me for permission to get freaky. Since you ain't gotta ask me for permission to get freaky. No, you ain't gotta ask me for permission to get freaky. Since you ain't gotta ask me for permission to get freaky.
Good morning, everyone. This is Emily Bermans from CKUT 90.3 FM, John Abbott on the air. Recently, there has been controversy about a certain product on the market. People have been arguing that palm oil has been destroying the environment. Today, I have some special guests that will express their opinions on it and prove to us if this is really the case. Right now, I'm here with Yolanda Riggs, Arnold Bermans, and Trinity Von Matterhorn. So, guys, why do you think farmers should stop using palm oil?
So I don't think dairy farmers should use palm oil because palm oil has been pretty much destroying the environment for a little time now. We've seen it with the Nutella, we've seen it with a bunch of other brands, and I don't think we should be using it because the harvesting of the palm oil has to do with a lot of deforestation, and all that is taking away a bunch of habitats for orangutans and a variety of other chimpanzee type animals, and I don't like that. It makes me really, really sad, and it's really bad for the environment too.
I don't think farmers should stop using it because I think it's good for the cows.
So I had heard a lot of different things there. I had heard that it was because of the, how you say, deforestation. Because it's bad for the environment, because they keep cutting down all the trees for the palm oil. But then since then, I've heard different things, so I don't really know. I just know that people are protesting, and that's not good for us.
Thank you, guys. For CKUT, John Abbott on the air, this is Emily Bermans. Have a good day.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to CKUT 90.3 FM. This is John Abbott on the air. I'm Evie Stockvis. See you next time.
Make sure my levels are at around 8.
CKUT 90.3 FM.
Blah, blah, blah.
Scan of the tongue twister.
Am I popping my peas?
CKUT 90.3 FM.
Start again.
Oh, should I do that? Okay.
I need a script.
CKUT 90.3 FM.
So, you want me to go through it again and actually say that?
This sounds so repetitive.
See, now I can't do it. Once more, okay.
CKUT 90.3 FM.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Wait, do you want me to say hello?
I'll have to do another one.
Yeah, maybe one last one.
Radio CKUT 90.3 FM.
Are you recording?
You are?
Oh. Can you press stop?
Célébrer, à nous célébrer, il passe, il fait tes waffles.